Welcome to myself, Max McGillivray of Beanstalk. Absolute pleasure today to have Andy from EFCIS on board for a very important broadcast. Andy, say hello to everyone.
Hi, everyone.
And we just commented, Andy's got a great range of shirts. I'm so jealous of everyone that comes on because they seem to be better dressed than me. So, Andy, we have asked to come on because, as Andy and I have discussed on so many occasions over the last, what was it, Andy, six months, 9 months, that there's so little conversation about Andy's area of expertise. And we want to impart this into the fresh produce, fresh food sectors, because, to reiterate, it is so important. So what's the subject today? The subject today is working capital is not just about raising bank funds. So Andy, if it's okay, I just want to give a bit of a rah-rah, as I call it, to yourself and your colleagues at EFCIS, so that everyone on the call, whether it be on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, or on the podcast, has an understanding. So you are a leading and key business in the specialized trade credit insurance sectors. As you state, your relationship with a specialized trade credit insurance broker is important. I'd say vitally important. A competent, experienced broker will secure challenging credit limits, ensure your claims are paid in full, and assist in the smooth running of your policy. Unlike many classes of insurance, trade credit insurance is fluid, very fluid, especially in these times. It's aligned to your sales ledger, which can change on a daily basis. Your broker must have the skills and expertise to ensure you derive the maximum benefit and protection. Clients that make the move to Andy and the team at EFCIS are very pleasantly surprised with the improved credit limits that they negotiate, the competitive premiums they secure, and the ongoing assistance and expertise offered at no additional charge. It's all part and parcel of the service we'd like to offer you. Andy said that to me on a number of occasions, as has his colleague Laura and a number of the others within the team. So the reason that I wanted to get Andy on is that we, Beanstalk, believe that the credit insurance offering for the fresh produce and fresh food sectors are very fragmented, with no clear brand names or direct conversation advice on offer. And we'll come into it. This is even more important as we work through the pandemic situation. So we, Beanstalk, we wish to assist our contacts with the direct introduction of the team, of Andy and his team at EFCIS and their award-winning business to assist you and your business. So Andy, is that a good summary of the business, of your team, or have you got anything else that you'd like to add to it, please?
Yeah, it's a good summary, and thanks for that, Max. And I'll take some of those words and put it on my new website. But I think it's more than that. It's really looking at a company's largest asset, and typically for most companies, it's their receivable balance. So basically, money that's owed to them from their creditors, and how we can get maximum benefit, meaning, you know, things like working capital, improving margins, avoiding bad debts, and improving cash flow. And when we talk about trade credit insurance, it's an important tool to do that, because within the benefits wrapped around a trade credit insurance policy, a lot of this will be included within it. Yeah. So, for example, you're outsourcing your risk assessment to a third party. They're helping you to collect the debt for disputed debt. So really, if you look at the company at a very high level, it's about developing tools and educating the market about how they can get maximum benefit from their sales ledger.
Okay. And Andy, well done. And one of the reasons I was keen to get you on after, if you remember, Will Hill from FreshPro very, very kindly introduced you to us at the end of last year. You were fantastic on a Brexit broadcast that we did just on the run-up to Christmas. And you were so eloquent as to just give it an understanding as to where you thought Brexit was going to go. And actually, the bulk of everything that you said and the other speakers came true. So where I'm very intrigued with you is that you're obviously very well plugged in into the financial sectors. And I'm not going to say this. Some of the banking individuals that I deal with, to me, that they're quite one-dimensional, monosyllabic. They're just representing the bank that they're associated with, and they, as such, they feel they're like politicians. They feel that they can't give an understanding as to what's going on elsewhere within the sectors, be that on a UK or international basis. And you, to me, and your business seem to be more of a free agent, that you're there to assist. You can tell it what's and all, because you've got no agenda. You've got no bank hanging behind you and a brand and a team of brand guideline marketeers to say what you can and cannot say. So just on that side, let's just have a review as to where we are economically wise. We're at the end of April. We're just in the UK. We're just coming out of lockdown. Andy, I was speaking to a client this morning who's really positive. They're in the food service sector. And they're stating that the likes of some of the bigger food service companies, when we went into lockdown the first time round, they saw a 90% reduction in sales. And as we've come out of lockdown and we're allowed to go to pubs and restaurants and eat outside, this particular larger food service business was anticipated to see an 18% rise in sales. And they've actually seen a 38% rise in sales. So they're really positive, and they're expecting things to be even better when I think it's the third week of May, we can eat indoors. So economically within the food sectors, everything's rosy. What do you think?
I think, as I said before, Max, we're in a very artificial economic environment at the moment. Yeah. If you look at, and there's lots and lots of zombie companies out there. And what do I mean by zombie companies? Companies that are and were financially weak before the pandemic, and in some respects, because of the support from the government, they're in a better position than they were before.
Wow.
But if you look at the whole dynamics of the marketplace, and you look at the journey of where we are today, and when I think we're going to recover to post-pandemic, as far as trade's concerned, I think we're still 18 months away from that. And I think what we're going to experience is what I call this credit gap, this bit in the middle where the economy begins to recover. There's going to be need for working capital. There's going to be demand for the products, but there's not going to be the support there potentially from things like financiers and maybe credit agencies, or even at some level, credit insurers. And what do I mean by that? I mean, so as the hospitality sector, if I look at this, the fresh produce sector, the big risk within it is still the fresh produce sector, the hospitality sector. And what's going to happen there is that there's going to be a number of facets, a number of key steps that need to take place, and challenges for this sector will determine whether that company will survive or not. And let's look at some of the stats that I've seen. 1 in 4 pubs won't open.
Wow.
Not necessarily linked to hospitality, but it's predicted that 250,000 SME companies will cease to trade over the next 12 months. So I'm now a restaurant. I've been closed. I've got furlough. My staff on furlough. I've got government loans. And suddenly the government loans need to be paid back. So I've got to service that debt. I can no longer put my staff on furlough. I've now got to hit the road running and generate as much business as I possibly can. Because if I don't, I won't be able to service the debt. I may not be able to raise additional working capital because my balance sheet gearing is too high. In other words, my gearing to my assets are too high. I then may struggle. If you look at why companies become insolvent, and I've got 31 years experience in this sector. And to go back to one of your earlier comments, the reason why I think we're transparent is that we're talking to companies every day. Yeah, they're telling us how they're trading, they're telling us their challenges, they're telling us what they need to grow their business. I would say that 80% of companies that become insolvent for one simple reason: they ran out of money.
Okay.
So you've got all these hospitality companies coming back. Yeah, there's going to be a demand. So we like to go to restaurants. Yeah, we like to go to pubs. But suddenly they haven't been paying their rent to their landlord for the last 12 months. Suddenly their landlord's going to knock on their door and say, okay, you're going to pay rent moving forward, and you've also got to pay the rent that during the last 12 months. And then the bank's going to come to them and say, oh, yeah, do you know all those loans that were supported by the government? Yeah, they're not free loans. Yeah, you've got to start paying and servicing those loans back. So I think there's going to be this period of time where unless the company, whether it's hospitality or any company, if they don't hit the road running, if they haven't got sufficient working capital, those are the companies I believe will become insolvent. I'd even go as far, Max, to say, I've traded through two recessions, and this one is different. I would say that it's likely that there's going to be a tsunami of insolvencies and claims in the trade credit insurance market over the next 18 months.
Wow.
So I hate to say, maybe my outlook for the economy, I hope is wrong, but it's not as rosy as...
But Andy, I think, again, all credit to you, because we need that sort of sanguine advice. I'm always an optimist, and I always just look out for positive things. So when people have asked me how things are going with us, I tell them that Beanstalk is accelerating rapidly, and our recruitment business is picking up again from it being very quiet at the top of the year. And I keep on going back to the same comment from Sorrell, founder of WPP, who stated in January, there's nothing fundamentally broken with the UK economy. We've been in hibernation for 2020. Come the end of Q2, Q3, you're going to see this Nike uptick as we all kick off again. But he's a marketeer. He wants to sell advertising, and that's why we need that extreme word of caution in some respects from yourself. And I suppose the worry is, Andy, isn't it, that if you're a fresh produce company and you then start getting these flood of orders coming in, that you want to service them, but then if you've got accumulated debts from perhaps those companies you've already dealt with, and they want to trade again, you're then going to get into this double whammy situation. Just to give an example, and Andy, we might have talked about this early in the year. One of our clients is a large salad producer, and they have a 15-year relationship with a large chain of restaurants in the UK. As we went into lockdown one, they were owed a considerable amount of out of money, hundreds of thousands of pounds, by this restaurant chain. And they understood that this restaurant chain couldn't do anything until they came out of lockdown. As they came out of lockdown, the restaurant chain engaged with this fresh produce company, asking for them to supply products. And thank God they did. This fresh produce company said, well, could you clear this large outstanding debt, or can we have a payment plan? And the restaurant chain said, well, no, if you're not going to deal with us and provide us fresh produce, we're going to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
What a difficult decision to make. But you'd be a fool, wouldn't you? But you could see, as he said, that the worst thing for businesses is just to run out of cash. That business, if they had engaged with them, they would have had that double whammy of this accumulated massive debt and more debt, because that particular restaurant business is just not... it's not sound. So what is your advice? There'll be lots of people watching this saying, well, we need this business, Andy. How can we protect ourselves? Andy, what would you do if you were us?
Okay, it's a really good question. And I think more than ever, Max, it's about picking the winners. Yeah. And you combine that to what we call know your customers, KYC. Yeah. First and foremost, let me talk about the positive aspects. Yeah, GDP growth. Yeah, so we are going to grow 4.2 probably in 2021, a further 7.2, 7.3 in 2022. So the positive is that the economy is growing. Yeah, the positive is the hospitality sector will come on stream, and we like to eat in restaurants and we like to go to pubs. Yeah, so let's not be over negative about what's going to happen. Yeah, I think the key driver with any business today is really saying, okay, I need to grow my business. There is going to be sales growth, but I really need to think about how I'm going to pick the winners. Yeah. So in other words, which of those restaurants are likely to be trading in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months? So there's a bigger emphasis, I suppose, on making sure that you understand what risks you are taking, what risks you're taking in relationship to the margins, really understanding your customer. And part of that, Max, is a really important document moving forward, is a cash flow statement for any company. So you, as a supplier, you would want, you shouldn't be relying upon historic filed accounts, because they could be 18 months old. So you need to, in some sense, raise your game. Yeah. And part of that is to say, right, okay, I want management accounts. I want a cash flow statement. I want some ideas. For example, if you're supplying a key supplier that's supplying some restaurants, you want to understand what risk your customer are taking. Yeah. And I firmly believe that those companies that invest in really getting to understand the risk, yeah, and we'll come on to risk and how you can manage that, those are the companies that will be successful. Yeah. Because I'm going to go back to what I said a few moments ago. This economy is growing, and it will grow. You just got to grow and you got to understand what risks you're taking. So for me, what would I do? I would say this, I would credit insure for one. Why? Because you're outsourcing all that credit assessment to a specialist, who understands your market. Yeah. You're also, as part of the credit insurance, you're also looking at what the trading payments are for other suppliers. So if you're supplying a customer, all what's happening is you're getting your own, if you like, performance data of how they pay, when they pay, and when they don't pay. In the context of a credit insurance policy, all other suppliers are notifying overdue accounts. So if you're a primary supplier, they may be paying you, but not paying someone else. So the long short of it, Max, is I think more attention to risk, better understanding of what risk you're taking for the rewards, and mapping those debtor risk with things like collection stance, margins, and so forth. Yeah. But also, you know, be prepared to talk to your client. Yeah, be prepared to have a difficult, challenging conversation with some of your customers. So in other words, you want that cash flow statement. So,
and in some ways, Andy, be prepared to say no. We both know what salespeople are like. They always want to get that win. Do you think it's a good idea to educate your sales team to start asking those questions as well, so that you've just got you're driving that behavioral change within your whole business? Ask the questions. I love your statement. Pick the winners. To tell to your sales team, pick the winners. Who's going to be here in the long term? Who can we assist in the long term? We don't want a legacy of our ongoing debt. Pick the winners. So Andy, would that be a good idea for these senior management teams to also just educate the sales team on the same basis?
Yeah, I would say even, you know, not just because of the effects of the pandemic, I think there should always be that close relationship between sales and risk and finance. Yeah. The old saying is, you know, a sale's not a sale until you get the cash in. Yeah. But I would say even more now, you know, sales guys are important. Why? Is because they're generally meeting the client.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they can have this firsthand instinctive feeling about how the business is going. So they turn up, is there less people? Is there less cars? So I think there's a real need. Yeah. For, you know, for a company to really understand risk in more detail. Yeah. And it's not just the credit control and the finance guy who understands that. There's got to be appreciation, yeah, within the business. What risk you're taking, what rewards, how are we going to grow our business? And if you adapt that, Max, when the economy is growing, your business will grow, but potentially it will grow with better quality customers. And then you've got the foundations in place for continuous growth as the economy continues to improve to many years to come. So I say now is the most important time ever to understand debtor risk.
Well done. And with these companies, when they start to, so say our collective clients, when they start to get new business in and they've picked the winners, they've outsourced the credit insurance to the likes of yourself, they've got all that market intelligence, but now they need additional working capital. Where's that with this current crisis that we're working through? How easy is it to raise additional working capital?
I think it's going to be increasingly difficult. And if you look at the market, the market's moved away from traditional bank lending, like overdrafts and loans, and it's moved more towards working capital. Yeah, it's called factoring or invoice discounting. So I think there's going to be a big demand for that product. Yeah, but that product also is dependent upon, in many cases, whether there's credit insurance, or whether it's a standalone policy, or whether it's a managed policy. So I think receivable finance linked to the raising of an invoice, I think there's going to be capacity in the market. Then you're looking at trade finance, yeah, where you're paying for your supply in advance. I think there's going to be capacity in the market. But where I don't think there's going to be capacity is for traditional funding. And if you look at the way in which banks looks at gearing and then relate to gearing to funding, a lot of these companies' gearings are too high. Yeah, the banks like between 25 and 50%. Some of these companies are 100%. Yeah. And then what we do see with the banks for bank overdrafts and loans is a lot of personal guarantees. So companies must be willing to give those guarantees. So the long and short of it is when I look at and talk about working capital, I see it with two key pillars. Yeah, the first one is traditional working capital in the form of funding. So whether that's receivable funding, overdraft, venture funding. But what's become even more important, because it may be difficult to raise that working capital you need to grow your business, is looking at other areas of your business that can influence the need for working capital. So in other words, you know, if you look at areas like improving your collections, for example, if you can collect money quicker and therefore you've got more money in the bank, you don't need to go to the bank to raise working capital. You've got the working capital to meet your everyday needs. And then you look at areas like, improving, negotiating good terms with your suppliers. So you're mapping your credit terms with your customer and your supplier. So I think what I think I'm saying is Max, we talked about the importance of picking your winners. I think equally it's important because that does then link into what risk you're taking with your debtors and how the risk on a certain debtor can influence how you collect and when you collect the receivables. So the more efficient you are in looking at all the aspects of risk and risk reward and collections, basically means you'll have more money collected in your bank account and therefore negate the need to raise the working capital. So I see moving forward, if you're going to grow, working capital finance, but also you've got to look at other ways in your business to generate cash to negate the need to raise more working capital. Hope that makes sense.
Got it. Just to challenge you, HSBC and Lloyds Bank this week have come out with some very healthy profitability figures. And the main reason for that was that last year they set a large amount of money aside, both banks and presumably the other large high street banks, for bad debts. And those bad debts haven't come through. So do you think there will be more flexibility with the banks now that they're feeling a bit better internally? Or is it as you state that they're just going to rigorously look at all businesses because they don't want to catch a cold with bad debts? Will the banks be more flexible now?
Okay, simple answer to that is no. And I'm going to make a prediction here. And hopefully in 6 months and a year time, we'll come back and revisit this. Yeah. Insolvencies and bad debts and defaults are at a record low. Yeah. So, we're seeing -24% less percentage of insolvencies than we predicted. What we have to remind ourselves, we are in an artificial economy. Yeah, this is not normal trading conditions. Yeah, so companies are benefiting from furlough, they're not paying their rent. Yeah, they've got deferment on their loans, they've got funding they wouldn't have raised without the government support. So the government have done a great job in supporting the economy. Yeah, so no, the banks are not incurring any bad debts. So what I said earlier, as the economy begins to pick up and they've got to pay their landlord and the furlough's no longer there, and then suddenly they've got to service their debt and they need some more working capital, or they incur bad debt themselves, let's put it into context. If you're on 5% margins and you lose 50,000, you've got to generate an additional £1 million worth of working capital or sales, to replace that £50,000. So my simple answer is we haven't seen the true impact of the pandemic yet. Yeah. So insolvencies are low. Banks feel comfortable. Even in our own market, the insurance market claims are lower than predicted. But all we're doing, and it's an expression that I hear quite a lot in the market, and I think it sums it up. All we're doing is kicking the can down the road. Yeah. So what I think is going to happen, we're going to see this flood of insolvencies. These are companies that would have perhaps gone bust before, haven't got the working capital to continue to trade. But also, a cynic in me says, or maybe I've been around too long. Cynic says to me, I'm now a business, I've now got loans, it's guaranteed by the government, I've got rent I've got to pay, I've got a big staff back, I've got no personal guarantees. Why don't I just cease to trade or fold the company and set up again? So I think we're going to see a high percentage of companies that may go down that route. Wow. So just to answer your question, and apologies if it's a long answer, but what we're saying is now artificially losses, insolvencies are low, both in the finance market and insurance market. As soon as those losses begin to come in, that's when I think we're going to start seeing the banks getting a bit nervous, maybe more restrictive, and maybe not providing the funding. Yeah, unless the government continue to support industry by giving some form of guarantee. And that's the missing component we don't know yet. Yeah, so we're hoping that the government at some level will continue to support the UK economy, because the furlough of September comes to an end. At the end of June, the rent issue comes to an end. At the end of June, you can actually go down and go wind up a company through the courts. And there's no support from the government. All this is happening. This is an absolutely perfect storm. Yeah. So if there's no support moving forward, then we are going to see that tsunami of insolvencies and claims in the market.
Okay, so coming back to our individual clients who are watching this, they need to pick their winners. They need to be very careful and have the advice from yourself and your team to make sure that they can plow through this storm, this upcoming storm that looks like it's going to come through to see through the other end. And it's fantastic. It's appalling what you state about these companies going into the likes of a pre-pack. And if you're a supplier to them and you get caught out on that basis, oh my God, Andy, can you imagine it? And then that company does that on a Friday and comes back to you on a Monday saying, can we set up a new account? And you're already owed tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands by that company. And there's nothing you can do about it. What an appalling situation to be in. But you don't have to be in that situation because you should be picking your winners and outsourcing your credit insurance. Just Andy, one thing, if it's okay to ask, just on the banking side, why are the banks looking to report better profitability figures? Because they've taken that money for bad debts back in house when it's just likely that we're going to have this tsunami. Surely they should be ring fencing that bad debt provision within their own banking structures.
I'm not aware how they provide, but just my cynical view again, Max, because it makes life a little bit more interesting. They've got shareholders they've got to pacify and satisfy. So at this moment in time, they've taken that decision to write that bad debt back in. I'm not saying they are, but I'm just thinking why I would do that on that basis. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there isn't going to be these claims, but when you look at it in a very logical, and what I tend to do, Max, and this is why I think we've been successful. I don't take this real overview, this corporate view of business and say, well, you know, this is the economy. I talk to people. I talk to companies. I can hear some of the strain and their stress and their emotion and so forth. I'm hearing it firsthand as some of the pressure and getting goods in. You know, I'm hearing that, you know, talk to the customers and the customers saying that they can't pay. We're at the coalface. And we're listening and seeing the signs. And part of this is logic. So if I'm a hospitality business, and I've got to start paying my backdated rent, I've got to start paying my loans, and I don't get the volume of customers through, I'm not going to last long. So all this, my argument in some respects is say, I can't see how it can't happen. I can't see, unless the government intervene, how they won't be this tsunami of claims. Because as I described before, Max, it's a perfect storm. We've got this big cooking pot and we've put all the ingredients in it. And I'm not sure we're going to like the taste of it when we get to eat it, because there is going to be some real some real challenges.
But Andy, if people take your advice and you're wrong, they're still going to be in a better place than before. So it is an absolute no-brainer to take your advice on this one. We've slightly majored on the food service side. Sainsbury's this morning have announced their profitability figures, and it's fascinating that with the demise of the food service side, the likes of fresh produce sales within store have seen a 30% rise, and so there's been a huge footfall going into the store. But Sainsbury's have reported a loss. It'll be on the all over the press, but something like 250 million. Andy, what's your view of fresh produce companies dealing with retailers? Do you think retailers are safe through this this pandemic and as we work our way through it?
If you look at the large multiples, and we look at risk every day, I would say there's no one multiple big supermarket that we're sitting here today and concerned about. There's two aspects to any risk. You've got the P&L, the profit, but also the balance sheet. And the balance sheet for Sainsbury's is pretty strong. And so from a risk perspective, we don't see any challenges there. The biggest challenge, I think, with the supermarkets is product availability and margins. And I think the problem I've seen when I talk to some of our clients is that the margins that they don't benefit from when dealing with these multiples is an issue, I think, long term. I don't see how the fresh produce market can continue to supply goods and the margins, given that there's some additional costs associated with their business. Yeah, Brexit and so forth. So, and we know that's 60% of the fresh produce market. So I was intrigued to hear that, but I'm not surprised. We see it from time to time. And again, if you look at across all the multiple retailers, there's no payment defaults. Yeah, there's no issues in meeting their banking covenants. Their balance sheet is very strong. Yeah, there's still a big demand for their products. So yeah, no, I don't see any risk there.
Andy, thank you, because I think I could just hear the tone of your voice as well, sort of uplift when you talk about the retailers. It's great to hear that, and it's fascinating that you've now entered the fray about margins. That we've had no proper food inflation within fresh produce for years. And if everyone has shown, if you remember the Brexit broadcast, we had Joe Shaw Roberts from Kantar on, and he was stating that all the bog off offers that happened with the likes of the discounters and the run up to Christmas, it does nothing to increase footfall into store. Fresh produce is so cheap. And it's morally wrong when you compare it to other products, whether it be sugary foods or whether it be the booze category. What's the classic example? Half a dozen bananas from Ecuador in Asda, in my local store in Brayston Edmonds, 89p for six bananas. They're more expensive to buy them in a high street in Ecuador. Is this just outrageous? But again, it's the supermarkets. We all know this. I just assume that if they can get the pricing low, it's going to drag the consumer in, and then they'll buy more. So there's so much talk about more of a concerted effort on the back of the pandemic for margins to increase to the benefit of everyone, including the retailer. But that, Andy, that's a subject for another day. What about this? Just going back to this, the working capital and the funding element, is that actually going to be an impact that the growth margin aspirations of our contacts, of our clients, have they just got to suck that up and just work through it?
No, I don't believe they do. I mean, it's easy to say no, they don't. But if you've got a big retailer and they say you want to supply us products, you're supplying the products on these margins. Yeah. So I think you have to accept that if with any ledger, you've got a spread of risk. Yeah, so you've got key customers where we know the margins could be lower. And then you couple that with then, say, non-strong retailers. And let me explain what I mean by that. They're not as big. So they're financially sound, but you can probably get away with better margins with those. And that's a really important point, I think, Max, is that we're saying to our customers now, you should have an idea of what the individual debtor grade is for each one of your customers. Yeah, and with credit insurance, you get that. So what you can't do, in my opinion, is treat every customer the same when it comes to margins. Yeah, credit terms are important. If you've got a customer that's very weak, why should you give them 60 days or 90 day terms when you're giving that 90 day terms to a better quality risk? So we need to look at really the whole aspect of margins and align that to that individual debtor risk. And by doing that, not only are you improving your margins, not only improving your profit, not only improving your shareholder value, you're improving your working capital within the business. And by default, you can pick the winners. Yeah, because you're looking at and you've got an understanding of, I look at my ledger today, I look at all my customers, which are the riskier ones, which are the strong ones, and what risk am I taking in relation to the margins? And those weaker ones, when they don't pay, you should be collecting those receivables a lot quicker than are good. So what we're saying is now is the need to put all this together to make sure, and I'll go back to what I said before, armed with that debtor, individual debtor information, you can pick the winners. And all that then goes into, by doing that and being efficient and then looking at margins, looking at collection stance and so forth, all that generates working capital. Yeah. When I say working capital, not in the finance sense, but money you have collected earlier. Or even sometimes when you've got a riskier customer and you're aware of it, ask for cash in advance. Yeah. So in other words, mapping the cash flow requirements. Yeah. With that. And also with your supplier. Yeah. So if you're getting the goods in and you're paying your supplier in 30 days, but you've then got to pay your customers not paying you until 60 days. you've got that 30 days of where you've got a working capital deficit. So try and map supplier and customers so there's some sort of, you know, it maps at the very least. Better still, get 90 from the supplier and get your customers to pay you within 7 days.
Well done. I'll just give you a little example. I'm sure you've heard of these before. There's a great food service company in Suffolk, and with companies with outstanding debts, when the guys go out with the lorries to deliver, they won't unload until they're paid in cash. And the MD has set up a little bonus prize with all the drivers. And they've now got a league of to see who can get the most outstanding cash in obviously in a polite and professional manner. So Andy, just as we come to wrap up, I think this has been fascinating. This has turned into a real masterclass as to the subject of why working capital is not just about raising bank funds within fresh produce. Have you got some people want takeaways from these broadcasts? Have you got some tips for us as to how we can improve non-bank working capital? What would be your tips? What would be your thoughts?
I think the first one is, Max, is what I've been saying. Yeah, is if I was in the fresh produce sector, I would have a long, hard look at my ledger today. Yeah, I would approach someone like us to say, okay, can you score my ledger for me? Can you identify that my better quality customers and my, let's call it average, and then poor graded customers, yeah? You then take that information and then you either decide whether you need to protect that ledger, that asset, that fluid asset by using credit insurance, or you then look at and mapping what risks you're taking with rewards. In other words, I've sat down with some companies and I've identified, say, 10% of their ledger, which is poor quality risk, yeah? So they've turned around and they've used that information to say, okay, well, are they going to reduce the contractual terms of payment or we're going to ask for payment in advance? Yeah. So they've used that information on that debtor level, yeah, to improve their working capital. Yeah. But also, ironically, they've improved their bad debts. They've also improved the level of resources they need in-house because they're not spending too much time on small end debt that's high risk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think the first thing is I would strongly recommend is you know, take a step back. Yeah, we're entering into a different phase of trade. Yeah, so yeah, we don't know what totally that's going to look like, but what is certain is it will be different. Yeah, there will be losses. Take a step back and look at where you're taking risk. Yeah, I've sat down, Max, with companies and I've said, okay, why are you trading with that customer at $1 million? Yeah, because I've looked at their financials and I think they're good for 50,000. Yeah, we've always traded with them. They've always paid on time. Yeah, I know Joe, I know I play golf with Bob. I think I hate to say this, but I think just relying upon those relationships and what's happened historically, I think it's quite high risk for a business.
Yep.
Yeah. So again, look at your ledger, look at the risk, understand the risk that you're taking. Yeah. Also look at things like terms of payment. Yeah. Are you competitive in the market or are you too competitive in the market? Are you offering too longer terms of payment? Obviously with a cash flow, you're looking at your fixed cost. Yeah. So you improve your efficiency within your business because you've got better quality customers, less overdues, then that would generate cash. But if there's any message today that I'd like to leave, really, it's one key message. It's simple. What risk are you taking? So what risk sits on your ledger? And when they look at risk, don't look at risk pre the pandemic. Yeah. Don't look at the risk because I've not had a bad debt in the last 12 months. The economy is artificial. Yeah. Look at your ledger as saying, I want to benefit from that GDP growth. I want to really think about picking my winners. I want to align my business, yeah, my collections, my terms of payment, so forth, with the risk associated with the individual. And I strongly believe that companies that adopt that type of approach will benefit from increased sales, will reduce the level of overdues, will increase their working capital, yeah, and probably need less resources because they're more efficient in what they do. Yeah. And if you do all that, Max, you're growing your business, you're making more profit, and you're satisfying your shareholders.
Yep.
And anyone asks me why I'm in business, I'm in business for that very reason. Yeah. And if you don't get that bit right, and you then start incurring the bad debts, and it does start eroding your profit margin, start eroding your P&L, and then you don't know what risk you're taking in this new world, I think you're going to have a bumpy ride.
Agreed. So, Andy, what have we learned today? We are in an artificial economy.
Yep.
All of our contacts, they need to pick their winners, the companies that they're going to be associated with. They need to collect their money quicker. They need to get better terms. And I don't think this is a time to be modest in respect to yourself and your colleagues at EFCIS. They need to outsource this element of specialized trade credit insurance to winning company, expert companies such as yourself. How does everyone engage with you and your team, please? How do they get in contact with you?
Okay, if you go first of all to our website, so it's www.fcis.com, and they want to reach out direct to me, it's andy.moylan@fcis.com, or I'm going to get it by mobile, so 07 968 955 275. And what I'd say, Max, is even if at this stage someone wants to explore a chief discussion, even if someone says, look, I'm thinking about looking at my ledger, I'm thinking about credit insurance, I'm with an existing provider, but I'd like a second opinion. Yeah. Now is the time to do it before these claims come in.
Wow. Andy, thank you very much. Before we wrap up, what's your favorite fresh produce?
I had mine a minute ago, bananas, because I don't normally have breakfast, so I'm grabbing bananas, I run to the office, and I also like aubergines cooked with lamb and tagine.
Andy, you just broke up because there's a satellite delay. What was the other one that you loved?
Aubergines.
Wow, I've never had aubergines. That's hilarious. Fantastic. So perhaps we could do a mixture of both, banana
and aubergine.
Then we can make a cookbook. And Andy, fantastic. What a masterclass. I hope everyone picks up on this. I hope everyone engages with you and your fantastic team, because you can...
We can make a real difference
for people's businesses as we hopefully get through this this artificial economy and get through to the other side. Andy, thank you very much. Thank you for the time, and say hello to all of your great team for me.
Will do. Thanks for the opportunity, Max.
Thank you, Andy.